You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, my name is Vaughn Armstrong. I've played more characters in the Star Trek universe than anybody, and I was Admiral Forrest. You are listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan, we have to kick off the show with a little bit of sad news. We have to acknowledge this.
It's rough, because I'm sure that the listeners are going to hear this repeatedly. Like, I'm sure that the listeners,
yes,
you know, as you know, like, people who listen to a lot of podcasts are probably going to hear this at the beginning of every podcast. I mean, me and my wife just did this with Nerd Nuptial, and I'm sure people are like, you know, oh, I'm already sad. I heard about it on social media. But the thing is, people will say, why didn't you mention it? You know, like, why didn't you talk about it at your show? And I'm not saying that to be snarky.
Yeah. Well, and as we're recording this, we're still kind of in the shock phase of it. This happened about 24 hours ago as of when we're recording this. And of course, we are talking about the passing of Anton Yelchin, who played Chekhov in the newest Star Trek movies, gone way too young at 27 years of age, in what sounds like a freaky car accident. And it's just downright sad. What a loss. What a tremendous loss of talent. A wonderful person whose career was just going onward and upward. And man, yeah, what more do you say? It's just sad. It doesn't matter if you like the movies that he was in or not. It's just sad. We lost another member of the Star Trek family. Way too young at that.
Way too young. You know, like, see, that's the thing is that, you know, this is a Star Trek show, and even though he's known for many great movies and many different roles, you know, this is a Star Trek show. And when you're talking about the Star Trek family, when we hear about, you know, like Doohan or Kelly or Nimoy, you know, when we hear about their passing, it's still a shock. We still cry. You know, we're still sad, but it's also at the same time we're like, okay, you know, they had a good long life. You know, we all knew this was going to happen someday.
Right.
But when you have someone who is literally the youngest in a cast,
mm-hmm,
and just they're gone because of a senseless, stupid accident, which is now maybe because of a faulty recall in the Jeep.
Right, as we're just finding out.
It's maddening. It's absolutely maddening because, you know, like when Philip Seymour Hoffman left us, you know, like so many people were like, this is a robbery of our culture. And then you find out that he, you know, it was because of something as senseless as a drug overdose. And you're just like, oh, how can it get more senseless than that? Well, here you go. This is how it gets
much
more senseless than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, when somebody so young dies with a senseless act like this, it is different. It's even more shocking because when somebody is sick, especially if they are old, you are mentally preparing yourself for if and when the moment comes that they are no longer here. When it's somebody who's very young and it's unexpected completely, it is a little different. It is much more shocking. It's a little hard to absorb it right away. And so we're all in that stage right now. And it's difficult. It's sad. We are sending all of our thoughts, prayers, what have you, whatever you do to his friends, his family, his castmates. They've all got to be grieving pretty heavily right now. So our thoughts are with you. And that is all that I really want to say, because this is a Voyager show. We had to acknowledge it, but we do have a Voyager topic. And yet
we are
branching out in Star Trek lore. And by that, what I mean is, Tristan's smiling like, explain yourself, Char.
Yeah, like, all right, whatever that means.
Well, I mean, we just had to shift gears a little bit. I mean, To the Journey is normally happy and peppy, but it is hard to gear from morning to, hey, let's talk about Star Trek, you know. Okay, so we're in that mode now. We're going to branch out to TNG a little bit in this week. And we've done this before. We have taken an episode from another show and written it into the Voyager kind of template, the Voyager format. And that's what we're going to do today. And you came up with the episode that we're going to do this with. So why don't you tell everybody what that is?
All right, this episode is called The Game from Season 5, Episode 6. It's described as Wesley Crusher visits the Enterprise only to see everyone behaving strangely on account of an addictive, mind-controlling game. Now, this is... I love this episode. This is a great episode. This is not this is not one of those times where we take an okay episode or a bad episode and try to punch it up. That's not what we're doing here. This is a great episode, a great TNG story that we think would be fun if we molded into the Voyager, you know, setting.
Right. All we're doing really is we're going to take this story and make it fit into the Voyager paradigm. Now, this does pose a couple of challenges that we're going to have to work through, right? Because we don't have a Wesley Crusher, and we may or may not have an Ashley Judd. Which, that could really be to Chris Jones's astonishment. Because that is, of course, if you know anything about Trek FM, one of his favorite characters of all time. And I believe he follows every one of Leffler's laws.
He takes it to heart, absolutely. And very for those seriously. Of you who don't remember the episode, we'll just give a brief overview real quick, where Commander Riker's on Ryza, because, you know, that's what he does.
He's a party boy. And,
he's with a Qatarian woman, and she says, like, hey, you know, like, I'm sexy, you're sexy, let's be sexy together. But before we do that, you know, here is a really cool game. And she puts on this headset, and he tries to put, like, the disc in the cone. That's all it is, disc in the cone. And it enhances the pleasure sensor of the brain if you actually get it working, if you actually use the mind control and put the disc in the cone. And so Riker, you know, takes this game to Enterprise once he's done with shore leave and says, like, Captain, you have to try this. And he just tells that to everybody he meets. He's like, you got to try this game. It's absolutely amazing. And so it just kind of snowballs. And so everybody's playing it. And Wesley comes on board to say hi and visit. And he realizes that everybody's acting strange. And he keeps saying no to, he even says no to his mother, you know, to play this game. And then he hooks up with an engineer, which is Ashley Judd, and they both are kind of like, yeah, people are acting strange. It's odd. I don't know what to do. And so they're the only two on the ship that are really that don't partake. And Data's been taken out of commission, but we don't know that as much as yet. I think he was taken out of commission by.
Yeah, he was taken out by Dr. Crusher.
Right. And we find that out later that it was deliberate, that it was on purpose.
Well, we saw that, though. I mean, we actually saw it happen, but we didn't really know why.
Oh, okay.
What we find out is that later, Data was one of the few people, of course, who was going to be immune to the effects of this thing. So they basically take him out so that the jig's not up so soon.
Yeah, so Wesley and Ashley Judd, Ensign Leffler, find out that it's this weird kind of mind control that it turns people into... not zombies, but it allows this Qatarian woman to control their actions, and it's all a ploy to take control of the ship. And they there's this nice chase throughout the Enterprise, and since Wesley is the Wunderkind and really smart, he uses a lot of the ship's own technologies against itself.
Right.
And they actually end up catching Wesley and forcing him to play the game, and he totally looks like he's having a drug overdose when they force him to play the game. And but then Data wakes up, and I can't remember how he wakes up, or did
Wesley found a way to reactivate him or fix whatever they did to dismantle him, and he came out just in time to save the day, thank goodness. And he takes out like the epileptic seizure flashlight and flashes it at everybody, and then that's it. Then it really is over, and everybody kind of returns to sanity rather than raging addict belligerence.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a great episode, and it's just really interesting to watch. And I like the dynamic between Wesley Crusher and Ensign Leffler. I think it's believable. And if you said today, like, if you announced that there was a movie or an episode where the two romantic leads were going to be Will Wheaton and Ashley Judd, you'd be like, okay, all right, what are you smoking? What's going on? Why'd you say that?
But
some reason back then in the 90s, it made sense with a young Will Wheaton and a young Ashley Judd. It just made sense.
Yeah, it did work. It did. I felt like they had good chemistry. They were definitely more than getting along.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And so that's the episode. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to write it on the fly in a Voyager model. Like, you know, Char, you and I have not talked about this beforehand other than this is what the episode we're going to do.
That's all we've done.
And we're just going to go 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so let's kick it. Yeah, so first things first, we're not going to have a Wesley Crusher. We need to establish who is going to bring the game on the show and who is ultimately going to save the day. Because there is no Wesley, there is no Will Riker.
There's no Data.
There is no Data. However, we have Harry Kim, Seven of Nine, Naomi Wildman, and Samantha Wildman. Voyager has a slight edge that TNG did not have in the game. We have a half-Katarian on board and a woman who was married to a Katarian. There is that connection. I kind of wonder if we ought to play on this.
I don't know how, because I get, like, okay, it was like, one's natural instinct would be, oh, you just replicate it where, like, you could just take it very literally where you take the XO, where Chakotay's, you know, like, on shore leave or something like that, and he finds the game and brings it back. You know, like, also, you could also think, like, oh, maybe it's Neelix because he's a morale officer, and he's like, yo, we need to play games on this ship, you know, like, here's one, you know, and everything like that. But, you know, that's such a trope, you know, like, Neelix causing, wreaking havoc.
Of
you know?
Course it is, yes.
But, like, I guess we could think about it where, from your, from the perspective that you brought up, where if we want to keep it in the Katarian family, this could even be a game sequel where Naomi is researching her heritage, where maybe Neelix is helping Naomi research her heritage because her mom can help her with the human stuff, but her dad's not there, so she doesn't know much about the Katarian culture. And so maybe she researches, you know, like circumstances on Starfleet ships with Katarians. And
you know,
maybe
I hadn't
she
thought about
replicates
this.
The game or something like that.
Why would she do that, though, when she finds out the outcome? I was actually thinking the total opposite. The fact that the Katarians tried to take over the ship. Samantha Wildman is going to maybe pull the drugs are bad message. Okay. Like, our, you know, your half-Katarian heritage has a connection to the Enterprise, and it wasn't a very good thing. This is why it's bad. What I'm thinking is a parallel where somebody is doing shore leave. I want to say Harry, let's just throw that out there, as the young, susceptible guy who would be more than happy to make love with a total stranger because he's done it before and he'd be happy to do it again, naively brings the game onto the ship. And it could be almost downright the same thing. Google Glass that charges through your retina and gives you happy-go-lucky feelings and whatnot. I do find it, a little troublesome that in the 24th century, addiction is such a accessible and easily spread thing still. I mean, essentially, everybody goes from being good utopian people to belligerent addicts. It's like meth. I mean, it ruins people.
Well, that's the thing, though, is like if you're talking about a normal drug, you have a chemical imbalance that you where you feel the urge to get that chemical back into your system. But with this game, you know, with this addiction, it's literal mind control.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, there is that component to it. But even so, like, good cautionary tale. I mean, it might seem fun, but be careful. Because we do know that video game addiction is real, for one thing. That does happen out there.
Yeah, my mother totally used this episode as a teaching moment where she's like, now you, like she did exactly what you did, where she shook her finger and said, okay, now you take this as a lesson, young man, that just because some sexy woman wants you to try something doesn't mean that you should try it.
Right. Well, here's what I'm thinking is because of what the Katarians did with the Enterprise, maybe Samantha Wildman, that clicks in her head, remembering something Gress Krendrick told her, maybe in the early days when they were dating or something, that would probably about fit the timeline. And make her suspicious of it. You know, people are trying to say, oh, Samantha, you've got to try all this. Naomi would love it too. And she's just, I've got to play the concerned mother card here real quick and double check a few things and see what the F this is about. Like, she's the suspicious one. And I'm wondering if those two are the ones who save the ship. Let's just, I want to throw that out there right now.
I'm cool with Seven of Nine and Naomi Wildman saving the ship together because I think the two of them together are a lot of fun. I think that would be interesting.
And I have an idea for that as well.
I think we should abandon the Katarian connection.
Really?
I think it ties us down too much. I think it's...
Oh.
Because are we rewriting the game or are we making a sequel to the game?
We are rewriting the game. We don't have to do a sequel. I mean, we can, but... we have conflicting ideas. That's your idea. This is my idea.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that if we're gonna basically reboot the game, you know, we can't have Naomi remember this event on the Enterprise because of research.
Maybe she doesn't research. Maybe Samantha is the one who cautions her into it.
That's still removing the Katarian connection.
No. Did you not just hear what I said a couple minutes ago about her saying something about, like, hey, I remember when Gress Krendrick told me about this whole thing that the Katarians did and they tried to control the Enterprise and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I don't think you're hearing me where I'm saying that.
Apparently not.
If we're rewriting the game, that means that this never happened on the Enterprise.
That's true.
That's okay. What I'm trying to say.
That's okay. Now I've got you.
Because now I pitched to you earlier saying, like, oh, we can make a sequel to the game. But then I thought that was too limiting. And then you were creating a sequel to the game, but in a different way than I was. I'm saying, let's ditch the connection. Let's say the game never happened on the Enterprise and we start fresh.
Hmm.
But we can still have Naomi and Seven together.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Seven as kind of the allegory to Data, where they know Seven is going to figure this out quickly. And so they put her to sleep for a while in her alcove.
I think it should be the Doctor is the Data.
I thought about that too.
Because it would be much easier to take him out of commission. Because that's the thing, is like Voyager has more than one Data.
Yeah, you know, that's just it, right? Yeah, you could use either of these two interchangeably. I do love the Seven and Naomi dynamic just because we've seen it before and it works. That's fine. Okay, so the Doctor is Data.
Yeah, that way we can keep Seven in the episode, and she's still trying to save the day, but she still needs a little help from her holographic friend.
Yeah, okay. And then, of course, Doc can show up and save the day, and then he's happy and his ego is satisfied, so that's good.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that really does work.
So we've kind of established the roles. So Harry's the fool who brings on the game.
Yeah. Let's just make him the fool. Somebody's got to be the fool, and there's not good choices on Voyager to make this happen. We already decided Neelix, no, I don't want to do it to Chakotay. And also, he's not a playboy like that. Like, if we're really, really trying to, if he's on a pleasure planet or something, that's not really Chakotay's style. He has to get to know somebody first.
So we have Harry as the one who introduces it. We have... Samantha, who doesn't want to play it.
She's very suspicious, yes. And she wants Naomi to stay away, too.
Seven thinks it's irrelevant. She's like, why would I do that?
Yeah,
that
games are irrelevant.
Yeah, and then we have the Doc, who gets taken out, but then at the very last minute saves the day with his his epilepsy seizure device.
Yes, I propose we keep that in. Seven will find a way to revive him, of course.
Right.
Because she's the one who could get in there. I just want to throw this out there. Yeah, Tom and B'Elanna, because B'Elanna would be able to revive the Doctor as well. She's going to be sucked in. Let's just say that.
Oh, yeah. I think right off the bat. So let's just go ahead and let's write the sucker. Okay, so we have our chain of events. We have our shifting characters. So where is Harry? Why is he in a different place for shore leave than everybody else? Why is
that
he special?
That is a very good question. Why is he by himself? Because we don't have the luxury like the Next Generation did where, oh, Riker wants 2 weeks vacation? Sure, he's going to go to Ryza. What you got?
What if he's not on shore leave? What if he is actually, what if they made a contact with a race and they're talking about, technology, and they're talking about advances. They're talking about helping each other out. They're really interested in the in their journey or something like that. And then one woman or whomever, you know, says like, hey, you may really like these new age phase inducers, but boy, have I got something for you. You know, this is better than a holodeck. And
yeah, it's a thank you gift. How about that? Like, hey, thanks for helping us out. Here's a little something from our world to remember us by. You're really going to enjoy it.
That's a great idea. That is a great idea. Yes, it's like they shake hands, they trade technology, and then they say thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then maybe Harry looks a little less like a fool. I mean, it looks so innocent.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, but like for some, like, and you know, if he told the doc beforehand, where like, okay, so maybe like later on in the episode, let's just jump ahead just for a second.
Yeah.
Where the doc actually raises the question, where the doc actually starts to see everybody play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks to Harry, and Harry's like, oh yeah, it's great, doc. Sorry, you can't try it out. It only works on humanoids. And doc's like, well, he's like, wait, you've already used this? Why didn't you come to me first so I could check this out? This messes with your head and you didn't check this out? And he says, oh, it's fine, doc. I feel fine. He's like, okay, well, give me a sample, or like give me one so I can check it out and make sure everything's okay. He's like, okay, yeah, I'll come by sick bay, in a couple hours. And doc says, okay. And then a couple hours later, we're like, why is the doc gone? You know, like, why is he turned off and why can't we turn him back on?
Yeah, a little more protocol than what happened on the Enterprise.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like, even though like he disregarded protocol, I think it would be advantageous for us and would answer a few questions where at least somebody said, why didn't you follow protocol?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So Harry got the thank you gift and he's now back on the ship.
Yeah.
So does he try it with the individual there, or does he try it like in his quarters by himself?
Oh. Hmm. That's a good question. I think we could do either way.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, or we don't even necessarily need to see that experience happen necessarily. We could just jump straight to, say he goes to Tom and B'Elanna in the mess hall for breakfast the following morning. You guys, check this out. I have the coolest toy ever.
I feel like we do need to see it. I think we need to establish what it is.
Well, here's the thing, is when he goes to them, we could watch Tom or B'Elanna play it for the first time. We don't necessarily need to see Harry fall for it. That's what I'm saying. We do need to see the effect like we did in the game.
Yes.
Yes.
I think you nailed it on the head with getting B'Elanna and Tom first, because those are the people that Harry would go to.
Exactly. Just like Riker went to Deanna. And she was having, well, she was making love with her hot fudge sundae. And maybe B'Elanna's making love with her banana pancakes. I don't know. Probably not.
So much imagery for this podcast. So do they do this in the mess hall? And then maybe they do it in the mess hall, and then that way other people are like, oh hey, what are you doing? Like crewmen we've never seen before kind of come out of the
woodwork.
It's
going to spread like wildfire then, because Neelix is going to be curious, and the other people in the mess hall, they're going to be like, hey, what's this? Can I try it?
You know what? We need to establish at the beginning where, instead of starting the episode with Harry, you know, like where we have operations log, whatever, where we actually start it with Neelix in Janeway's office. And, you know, like Janeway does her captain's log and she's like, oh yeah, like we haven't made first contact in months. And, it's been a really trying time because this region of space, it wreaks havoc on our systems. And the holodeck's been out for 2 months and everybody's on edge, everybody's stressed. And then Neelix goes in.
Morale.
Yeah. And Neelix says like, oh, you know, Captain, we've got to do something, you know, like what, you know, like everybody is, you know, like is being snarky and like snapping at each other. We got to find some sort of release. And they don't know what to do.
A little short with one another. Tempers are
just kind of establish that this crew needs a release. And so this is a welcome respite when Harry brings it on board.
Oh, I like it, because it seems like the perfect answer to this problem, and it's only going to create more problems. I love it. That's right. Perfect. Right. Great. Yes. Okay.
So then we fast forward back to where we were in the mess hall, and then, you know, the people coming out of the woodwork, and Neelix has the bright idea of mass producing them.
I mean, do we have Captain Janeway grant everybody extra replicator rations so that they can get their fix and get one of these devices?
Yes. This scene has to happen after the dock is down. Oh, and that and they because that's the thing is that, like, if Janeway, I think, would check with the dock first before producing these things.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's why they don't think that there's any foul play, because systems have been going offline for the past couple of months, and then the doctor is just another, they think that the doctor is just another victim of that happening.
Sure, yeah. And hey, B'Elanna's getting right on it. It's great. Lo and behold, she's already addicted. So yeah, that's going to go well.
Seven and Samantha, how do they come in?
That's a great question. Well, I wonder if maybe it's just a matter of we're going to maybe have a scene where maybe Seven and Naomi are playing a game of Caddis Cod or something, and Samantha comes up to them and, hey, Naomi, it's time to do your homework, or it's time for bed or something. And they're in the mess hall, and Tom, maybe we've had enough of Tom. I don't know. It could be somebody else. You tell me. He comes up to Samantha and says, hey, have you tried this thing yet? This is an amazing game. Forget Caddis Cod, guys. I think you ought to really try this. And Samantha just has that vibe going where something is just not quite right with this. She sees the odd behavior. She's the Ashley Judd, maybe, character. Like, this just isn't quite right. And she says, oh, yeah, I'll check it out. I heard the thing about the rations. We're going to go to our quarters right now and give it a try. Aren't we, Naomi? Let's go. Let's get the hell out of here. And so then they go off maybe a little bit, and Naomi's confused. And what was that about, Mom? And she says, I'll explain later. And then we cut to their quarters, and she says, I don't want you to try that game.
I think I'm going to have to disagree with you, and here's why. And you can tell me if I'm completely way off base.
I feel like
Samantha needs to be the Beverly character that pushes. Yes, like, is the Beverly character that pushes Naomi into Seven's arms, where, like, that's why Naomi goes to Seven, and that's why Naomi can only trust Seven, because something's wrong with my mom and I have no one else to turn to. I can't go to Neelix. I can't go to my mom. Right.
Yeah, Neelix is a goner, and if Samantha's gone too, then Seven is about the only person she can really trust.
Right.
Ah, dang it. You're right.
Even though Naomi is super smart, she, you know, she's not like Wesley. You know, like,
she's
She's still a kid, and she can't do the things that Wesley can do. So we need that conduit with Seven for her to scan the device, to go and talk to the captain about it. You know, that kind of thing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So, okay, then where do we go from here then with Naomi?
Well, let's say the scene happens the same way that you're talking about, where Neelix goes to Samantha. You know, like, says, like, oh, you got to try this. And Samantha's like, okay, you know, maybe we will, maybe we won't, you know, or something like that. You know, like, and so there is doubt. And she tells Naomi, like, don't do this, okay? Like, you know, like, this is
let mommy
weird.
Try it first and make sure it's okay.
Maybe do something like that. We're like, let mommy try it first before you try it. And then immediately Naomi sees her, like, after the fact, like, whoa, something's wrong.
And then
wrong.
That's it. Then Samantha's that's gone, it. Too.
Yeah.
And then Naomi realizes, oh, this is not going well.
And she goes to Neelix, and, like, she goes into his quarters. Yeah, and he's a zombie. She goes out. She goes to, like, she goes to the mess hall and sees a whole bunch of zombies. And then she just runs to Cargo Bay 2.
Yep. Seven, help me.
Seven. And maybe, like, you know, Seven was, you know, like, regenerating for an extra long time while all of this was going down. Because of A plus B, and Naomi wakes her up and says, like, okay, you got to stop with this 32 cycle, you know, this 32 hour cycle, and then she explains what's happening, and then Seven immediately finds the device and scans it, and so we have that scene where Naomi and Seven are in the science lab.
Okay, cool. and they start to uncover the very addictive, rewarding nature of the game and why people are just so easily sucked in. Now, do we want to have kind of that little subplot where this is all a ploy to control the minds of the crew so that the ship can get taken over? I think we have to.
You know, we've seen this before in Star Trek, where the people that they trade with, they're say that they're obviously in a worse spot than Voyager, but yet, like, with these other races that we see, you know, like that one race that goes Borg, like when Seven walks by, who steals a warp core, like, well, they won't be that obvious. Like, they know that they're worse off, but they still trade and they still think that they've made their lives better, and they're really happy about it. They're just like, thank you so much. You've done so much for us. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, there's this bowing before them, but the reason why they're doing that is because in the back of their minds, they're like, okay, this game is, we're going to get their whole ship if we play our cards right.
Yep, that's the game. That, well, yeah, the game. Haha, see what I did there.
Oh my God, that's the name of the show.
Oh my God. Yeah, but that's exactly what they're going to do, and so then they're basically just going to be like pirates, take it all for themselves.
Arr.
And then hold the crew as prisoners, slaves, whatever. Yeah.
Seven finds out that things are going wrong. And then she goes to the dock, but then finds out that the dock is down.
Yep.
And then she tells Naomi, she's like, okay, I'm going to lock you in cargo bay too. And I'm going to go talk to the captain. And Seven goes to talk to the captain, and she says, like, listen, I scanned this. This is crazy. Everybody's using it. We need to stop this. We need to figure out a way to stop this. And I can only do this with the doctor. Mm-hmm. And Jane was like, hey, this is pretty serious. This is crazy. I guess we got to do something. She's like, so, like, you know, go talk to B'Elanna. She's the one working on it. So make sure that she's, you know, doing what she needs to do. And then we do the whole scene, just like in The Next Generation, where as soon as Seven leaves, Janeway puts the thing on her head. But then the only difference is that you see her take a big swig of coffee as she's playing the game.
Perfect. I love it. I love it. That's great. Just, yeah. Forget the scene in Bride of Chaotica where she takes a sip of coffee and it's practically an orgasmic experience. This is even bigger and better than that, if you can imagine it.
If you can imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we have happen. And then, so what? Describe to me the scene where Seven goes to B'Elanna to figure out why the doctor's not up yet.
Ooh.
I think it needs to be in engineering.
Of course, B'Elanna is going to fight her at every step of the way. Just like, hey, look, it's a lot more complicated than meets the eye. I am on it. I don't need your help, though. I've got this. It's not something where it requires an extra brain or another set of hands. It's just going to take time to, I don't know, run computer diagnostics and things of that nature. Just let it go, Seven. It's fine. It's good. She's really pushing her away to the point where Seven knows that she's full of it.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I mean, I'm not getting very specific, but...
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. That was exactly what I was thinking, where Seven goes to engineering, and B'Elanna just totally pushes her off, saying, like, listen, you know, like, I got this. Okay, Seven, I'm the chief engineer. I know what to do. You just go do your own thing. I'll do my own thing. And then, like, B'Elanna says, it's much more complicated than you're making it sound. Seven's like, no, it's not. All I need to do is press that button over there, and you're not letting me. You know, like, something like that.
Exactly, exactly. And B'Elanna just... I don't know. Does it work? Does Seven effectively get blown off by B'Elanna, or does Seven win that argument?
I think this is where escalation happens.
Uh-huh.
Where Seven tries to, like, in a normal circumstance, what Seven tries to do is overstepping her bounds. But from an audience perspective, we're all with her. We're like, oh no, you need to disregard B'Elanna and go do it. But from this perspective, from the in-universe perspective, I think B'Elanna would say, this is my engineering. Like, you need to leave. And if you're not going to leave, I'm going to have security escort you out. And maybe that's where it gets a little crazy, a little heated.
And then what about this? What if B'Elanna shifts gears and tries to make Seven use the device? Like, you know what? You are really stressed, Seven. Why haven't you tried this game yet? Come on, just relax and do it. Try it just once.
I think that absolutely can happen. But I think there needs to be escalation of fear. There needs to be something that drives the plot towards the climax where, like, it's no longer just Seven thinking that something's wrong. Like, there needs to be a threat to her life or a threat to her sanity.
Ooh. Okay, how are we going to accomplish that? I mean, is B'Elanna going to threaten to fight her? Restrain her?
I don't think B'Elanna is that low brow. I think she would just say...
No, I don't think so either.
I think she would call security. She'd say, like, or like everybody, like, maybe, okay, I have an idea.
Okay.
Where, you know, everybody, you know, we have all the background actors. They're all doing their thing. You know, like, it's nothing unusual. It's like something that we see every single week on Star Trek where there's 15 background extras just walking around saying peas and carrots, peas and carrots, peas and carrots. And they're handing pads from each other. And all this is like this heated exchange between Seven and B'Elanna is happening. And like the background extras are still walking around. And then B'Elanna says something to the effect of, you know what? You haven't tried this game, have you? And then everyone in the background looks at Seven.
Do they slowly zero in on her?
Yes, they slowly descend on her.
Okay, that's sort of the image that was coming to my mind as you were describing this, thinking that's how that would play out. So, okay, good, good.
So then that's when Seven's less like, they do the whole horror movie zombie walk where they're moving way too slow to catch up. You
know? And they're all moaning.
And so Seven leaves immediately to go find Naomi.
Yes.
And maybe she gets a cargo bay too and people are trying to break in.
Ooh, yeah.
And she kicks their ass using Tsunkatsu.
Okay. Then maybe she and Naomi are on the run. They get trapped somehow, and that's when the doctor has to come in and save the day. Because Seven's going to run out of time.
So, okay, so they're trapped in Cargo Bay 2, and they all descend upon her in Cargo Bay 2, and then the doc comes and saves her. Is that what you said? No, wait, is that what you said? I thought that's what you said.
I don't know if we wanted to have them run around a little more, but Cargo Bay 2 would work just as well, too.
I think they need to run around a little bit more.
Think so? Need them to run and hide a little bit?
I think they need to run and hide. We need to show how smart Seven is, show how much she knows the ship. And also, I want to see Seven hold Naomi while she's running through the corridor like we've seen before. I just love that shot. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when it was. But yeah, like Naomi just kind of like put her hands up in the air for Seven to pick her up. And then so she does.
Come on, this girl can run.
No, we've seen it before. I promise you, we've seen this before.
Well, maybe she's just holding her hand. I mean, come on. Let Naomi have a little action. She's not a little girl.
This whole, like, not without my daughter syndrome, you know, where she's just running around. God.
No, we don't have to do that.
Fine. Take away the little moment that I wanted to put in there. Fine.
Oh, come on. No, come on. Let Naomi have a little bit of heroism and let her stand on her own two freaking feet. Besides... It's really hard to carry, let's say she's a five-year-old, the equivalent in size of a five-year-old. That's no small feat, even for somebody like Seven. Come on. She's got to run.
Okay, we'll just disregard that we've seen it before, and we'll just move on, okay?
The girl's growing up, man. Things change. Get with it.
All right, so what are they doing? Like, where do they go? Like, she goes and, like, she kicks their ass outside of Cargo Bay 2. She picks up Naomi. She leads Naomi, and where do they go? What do? Do they try to get off the ship? Do they try to get to the Delta Flyer, maybe?
Or are they trying to maybe get to the bridge? Are they maybe doing the site-to-site transport that Wesley did on the ship just to try and get away a little bit? And then maybe do they end up on the bridge, and that is kind of the end game, where they're surrounded by the senior officers, and they're all gone, and then that's it. There's a force field surrounding them. There's nowhere else to go. They're screwed. I mean, that's got a lot of parallel to the episode itself.
It's true. That does have a lot of parallel, which is kind of why I'm like, maybe we shouldn't end on the bridge. Let's have Seven lead them from location to location. What if that's one of the first place that they go, is they get to sick bay, they try to activate the dock, and they can't, and they have to leave, but it was delayed. Where, like as soon as they leave... the sick bay, once we realize that, like, oh crap, we can't stay here, that's when we see a console that says, like, you know,
a delayed
activating
reaction.
Yeah, like activating, and we start to hear the sound of him appear.
Uh-huh.
And so we know it's coming.
But do we want that? It's kind of fun in the game where Data shows up on the bridge and it's just a complete surprise.
That's true. I guess we could keep it as a surprise. So, like, they try, but they fail, and we don't see it coming. Like, we don't see that console or something like that.
All right. Yeah. And then it just so happened it was a delayed reaction, and we can just blah, blah, blah that later.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. So, okay, they run around, and then, meanwhile, then the dock does activate, and the security officers that were running after Seven and Naomi get seizured, and they're good. And the doctor just goes around the ship, starts doing his thing, programs the consoles to help him out a little bit to make the process go faster.
Where's the final scene? Like, where's the last stand? You want to say the mess hall? Well, everything happens in the mess hall on Voyager.
Then it is sort of the logical place, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's just do that. Let's do that.
Okay, fine. That's good. I mean, if it can't be the cargo bay and it can't be sick bay, the mess hall is the next logical place.
That's right. And they started this whole journey in engineering. So, yeah, it would either be the transporter room or the mess hall. Yeah.
Let's just do the mess hall.
What's the epilogue here? Like, what's the falling action? What's the lesson learned?
Yeah, because there's not going to be the romantic overtones of leaving a newly found boyfriend, girlfriend. Yeah, in the dust here. Not happening. Nobody's going back to the academy. Maybe it's between Samantha and Naomi, where Samantha's really proud of her daughter.
Yeah, I like
for
that.
For doing her part to save the ship, for listening to her mother and not playing that stupid game.
Maybe this is the genesis of Coruscant between Naomi and Seven. Maybe this is what turns them to Coruscant, where...
like, physical games only.
Yeah. Like, they make that joke, and where it's just like, hey, do you have any free time? And Seven's like, actually, yeah, I do. I do have some free time. She's like, do you want to play a game? And Seven just kind of raises her eyebrow like Spock. And she's like, how about just a one with a board? How about Coruscant? And she's like, okay. You know, something to that effect.
That might be cute. Yeah, and that's kind of got that message of, hey, look, careful. Don't play too many video games.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Okay, that works for me. That's a great little coda at the very end. Message, morals, meanings, they're all set. I think we're good to go. We have an episode.
So what are we going to call it? Are we just going to call it the game? Or are we going to call it something more Voyager-esque?
We could just call it the game, but that's really not what we do here. We got to try.
All right, Grand Theft Starship.
Grand Theft Starship. Oh my god, this is a virtual game where you have to, it's like jack runabouts and shuttlecraft and then find alien prostitutes and stuff for your health.
I'm good with it. There we go. I think that was a genius idea.
I personally love it. It doesn't fit well into the Star Trek paradigm, but I love it, and it's our show. We can do whatever we want.
I was going to say, we found the name of the episode and this podcast, Grand Theft Starship.
Okay. It's a done deal.
Done.
Sold. Okay. Well, Grand Theft Starship is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at the other video games you may or may not be playing on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
50 years, there's been something to carry it this far. In that vein of, hey, it's our generation or our era's mythic heroes that we can look up to. Do we dare put that in something that's lasted as long as, you know, literary-wise, Shakespeare and some of the other myths of you know, the ancients that have found a purpose and a use that still speak to people?
The orb.
Well, the wonderful thing about Z'all is she just has it in spades. You know, I mean, she's been mistreated her entire life by her parents and yet has turned out to be this beautiful, amazing person. Part of that's probably Kira taking care of her for so long now.
Yeah.
Women at Warp.
Admiral Alan Alda came to visit Captain Coretta Scott King. Meanwhile, morale officer Beyonce is trying to deal with her new Weasley sweater, and
They're all partying at the first contact party.
Melodic Treks.
This score is one of my favorites for Star Trek The Next Generation and is similar in many ways to a film score that I love. The episode is Data Lore, and the film score that I will compare this to is Alien by Jerry Goldsmith.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on any kind of a platform that you can possibly have on your heart's desire. And none of our shows are possible without the lovely folks at Patreon, because the folks that help us out on Patreon are the people that keep this thing running. Now, if you haven't checked this out for yourself, please consider becoming a subscriber and helping us out. Go to patreon.com/trekfm, and all of our funds go toward running this network, because it costs a lot to distribute and buy the bandwidth and all of that fun stuff. And we have more than one podcast coming to you every single day. So it adds up very quickly, and our numbers only keep going up thanks to our wonderful audience. So on TTJ, we have several associate producers that we want to thank, and these people are all awesome. They are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Beliso, and Kay Janeway. Thanks, you guys, for being associate producers of TTJ. There's another way you can help us, and that is by going on iTunes, and that is also very beneficial to help us rise up in the rankings and get exposure to the podcast. Now, we have a couple of people to thank for writing us reviews and giving us 5 stars in the US iTunes store. Those lovely people are Angel Finally and Greg Bentley 84. Thank you guys very much for writing very nice reviews. We appreciate it so much. Tristan, I want you to know, if you've not seen this review yet, that Greg loves your audiobook.
Oh, cool. Thank you, Greg.
Tells everybody to give it a listen. So thank you very much for doing that, buddy. All right. Now, that said, one thing we ought to follow up with before we go is our little poll that we conducted last week, asking our listeners if you prefer that we preview the next week's topic or if you would rather it be a surprise. And I would say that previewing next week's topic won by maybe one vote. It was really, really close.
Well, how about this? Let's split the difference. So next week, we're going to do a top 5 list, but we're not going to tell you what that top 5 list is.
I like it. We'll meet them halfway.
But you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
That's right. So until then, this is Ben to the journey.
To the journey!